This week on The Line, we catch up with our dear friend, John DiLucci.
I'm so excited to talk to him. Welcome to On the Line.
Oh, we've got it. We're starting.
Yes.
Oh, let's go.
We have an incredible guest today. I can't stop smiling because my dear, 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 dear friend, John, everybody, drum roll. Say it.
DiLucci.
Get
DiLucci.
It straight.
DiLucci.
DiLucci.
I'm so angry about that.
DiLucci. Yeah. We are now DiLucci.
The reason I'm so angry is because I was like John DiLucci. And then I listened to a bunch of recordings and everybody calls you Don DiLucci. Who the hell is DiLucci?
So, there's a story there.
See?
And I was DiLucci for a long time in high school and college.
What do you mean?
Well, then I found out I saw my grandfather's papers and my grandfather, John DiLucci, was actually Johnny DeLucia.
Right? So they changed their name because of the Italian xenophobia?
Exactly. So I was like, wait a minute. I like DiLucci. But I couldn't go change the whole thing. So I said, listen, I'm DiLucci. And I was working with a bunch of Italian guys at that point. And they're like, hey, what are you? What is a DeLucci? This is an Italian name.
Yeah.
And I said, no, DeLucci. Oh, that's a better.
Yeah.
That's a better. So that's how I've been DiLucci for 30 years.
But you grew up past the age when people didn't like Italians, like you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were already eating. We were eating meatballs and loving it by that point.
Yeah.
But for a long time, that was a thing.
Well, and my grandfather was.
I mean, there's story after story about name changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I mean, what we think about today, you know, you're like Italians.
Yeah.
The ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all the stereotypes of like the mafia and all that stuff where you're like, that's the pejorative, which I never really knew as a kid. I was just like, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was kind of before us, right?
Yeah.
Now, like when they, in the 70s, when they tried to stop The Godfather from being made, you know, the Italian coalition stopped.
Oh, because they thought it was going to paint a bad paint. So right wild.
Now, let's tell everybody who John DiLucci is.
Oh, my God, I got a whole intro for you.
Tell everybody who John is. I know who he is. You know who he is. But our listeners do not.
That's true. All right.
I wrote a whole thing about you. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah,
I spent some time.
All right.
12 minutes. Our next guest is John DiLucci.
There you go.
God bless America.
You.
Jesus. A self-proclaimed accidental chef, John found his way to the wonderful world of restaurants via a career as a recruiter. You were a recruiter? Recruiting. No?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, okay. John's passion for cooking was first realized when a culinary school teacher recognized his natural abilities and helped shepherd him towards his ultimate calling.
Karen.
She wasn't a Karen, but her name was Karen.
Yeah, her name was Karen. She was awesome. Yeah.
Now calling someone a Karen can be a little bit, but in this case, she was great.
Right.
Most of us were first introduced to John's cooking from his time as the chef and partner of the famous Waverly Inn in New York City. The Waverly Inn was perhaps the hottest restaurant in the entire world. It was a veritable who's who of anybody who was a who, and the hardest reservation in New York City, and perhaps by extension, the entire world, bar none. The fame and flame aside, John makes an absolutely stupendous roast chicken.
I had it last night.
His cooking speaks for itself, and he's proven it time and time again over the years, opening hit after hit and helping revive some of New York City's most iconic fallow institutions. John is currently the chef and owner of a longer list of restaurants than I care to recount. He's a proud father, a best-selling author, and he's currently helping redefine the way we enjoy food at home through his partnership with Cook Unity. Please welcome a man who will definitely not share the stories of drunken celebrity mayhem that we all know he partook in, no matter how hard we beg. Although it has been enough years that I figure you could just tell us a couple.
It's been a lot of years.
A little bit. Hello, and so glad to meet you, which we already did earlier, but my soon-to-be ex-dear friend, the one and only, the handsome John DiLucci. How did I do?
Wow.
Right?
Who is that guy?
Illustrious career.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
We can go home now.
Wow.
You can't do better. Yeah.
And there's so much more.
So much more.
That's not even the half of it.
And so much less.
Well, I will just say I did eat at Ombra last night, your latest project, and it was so damn delicious.
Well,
and
nice,
we're so happy you're back,
especially
in the West Village, which is where I feel like you belong. So I had dinner at Ombra last night, your latest project, which was absolutely delicious, tucked into a little corner. It's such a great vibe.
Yeah, it's cool. 11th and Hudson. Really great corner, actually.
The lighting, the bar, the drinks, the service, the food.
Was that fettuccine al limone?
It was tagliatelle al limone. It was so fresh and bright and delicious.
Popular dish right now, isn't it? Isn't it around? It's in the consciousness.
It's definitely
lemon pasta. It's weird. Yeah,
it popped off. I just recently did a video, and people seem to really love it.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Ish views. It's light. It's bright. I think Americans are still learning what's authentic Italian.
Yeah.
People rediscover that.
Yeah. Know. And so it's funny. One of our partners is Italian, and he brought back an Amalfi lemon, and I did it with an Amalfi lemon.
Stop.
Yeah, it was really
totally different.
Quite different.
Does an Amalfi lemon have like a? I mean, I've been there. They have huge lemons.
Huge, juicy, and sweet.
They're
and
sweet. Are they a different variety specifically
like
of lemon
Sorrento?
Tree?
Genus? You mean?
Yeah. Wow.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I've never.
I don't
had
know,
one.
But they're quite delicious, big and. They're not waxy, so you actually, you know, you can use the.
Yeah, because they're not like coated with anything.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
So it's very, very good. Yeah,
I remember going down the Amalfi Coast, and I was like, I thought that they were grapefruit.
Yeah,
they're like really good, but they got a thick skin. It's not all. Mm-hmm. It's not
right.
all juice.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Wait, so John, what Dan said is true. You kind of are a career changer.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, 25 years later. Yeah. So I don't even remember the other group.
I know. Well, yeah. I don't remember you doing anything but this. Yeah. But so you did something else before you were a chef.
Yes. I did a lot of things. I played music. And then I sold art. I sold photography.
You sold photography or took pictures?
I repped photographers.
Oh, really?
I repped photographers, cool. Fashion photographers. I did that for a while, and I did a lot of things while I was playing music, while I was figuring out what the hell I was going to do with my life. And then I did recruiting for a long time. I was quite good at it.
What industry?
Insurance.
Oh, yeah, classic. Yeah. Insurance recruiter.
Insurance recruiter.
Who knows? That's one of the main ways that people get into the culinary arts, actually. It's just so goddamn boring that you're like, I have two choices. I could either just end my life right now or I could just start cooking. So sorry. Did I say that?
I mean, are there any skills that transfer from insurance recruiter to chef?
Yes.
Insurance fraud and Jewish lightning.
Exactly. No.
What are they?
Well, you know what it is? So it's funny. When I look back sometimes and I think, well, what's the greatest skill, right? When you're opening restaurant, when you go from being a cook to a chef to now a restaurateur and you're raising money, right, for restaurants. And I think the thing that really helped me the most was knowing how to make the phone call and asking for a $100,000 check.
You're
like,
so good
that's
at that.
That's not easy, right? And then, you know, and I did that, you know, five times, right? Five different places, and you know, it's not an easy thing, and it's a good skill to have, and I mean, if you do want to have restaurants, you know,
honestly,
on your own.
I'll say out loud that that's something I still don't know how to do, and when I was negotiating contracts or salaries when I was in the restaurant world, I would think to myself, what would John do?
Yeah.
Because you were such a good negotiator and you were so straightforward.
There's a saying about that. It's like WWJD. That's you.
Yeah. What would John do?
Yeah.
Or what would Jesus do?
I think it was Jesus.
Same thing.
Christ.
Same thing.
Who knows?
That Jesus, by the way. Not the prep cook that we work with.
Jesus. That's Jesus.
Yes. Yeah,
he never came in on Sundays.
Right. No, he never. He played soccer, usually.
But I always admire that about you because you had the business side, the creative side, the skill set.
Right. Well, that's just because it was an accident. It was a happy accident that I did other stuff and then I did cooking later and that stuff all sort of transferred and, you know.
Does it get in the way, the business? Like, I always think about that. The people that are, I'm in kind of the same boat. Like, I'm raising the money, I'm doing the business side of things, and then I'm finding myself in the kitchen and I'm half the time I'm distracted by the business and then I feel like, if I just spent my time behind the stove, it would be so much better, you know?
And yes, it's, you know, now I have at Ombre, I have partners that deal with all of that crap.
Oh, that's nice.
You know what I mean? And the taxes and the sales tax and the payroll and I don't need to do that anymore. And yeah, it's way better. It's way better because I can focus on the food and the stuff that I really like doing and the stuff that I'm actually better at.
And that's how we all get, like, you get recognized for being a great cook. You start cooking. You love cooking. Your food is recognized. The restaurant is successful because of it. And then you find yourself distracted by all this nonsense that, you know.
I mean, I'm a terrible businessman.
Yeah. The record speaks differently.
Well, yeah, it speaks differently because I had a lot of help, right? But, you know, man, it's not my thing. It's not me. Sit in front of a computer with a spreadsheet. It's like, get the rope.
No, you know, you're an artist.
That stuff that's really the necessary stuff. That's just I want to avoid with all.
Are you a procrastinator or do you like? Are you like knock it out?
I knock it out.
Yeah. You do?
Yeah.
I feel like there's two different types of people. No one's in between.
Yeah. I'm admittedly a procrastinator because I only work well under pressure.
Yeah.
Like I love that pressure.
But you're knocking it under pressure, though.
We're figuring out what this show is right now.
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
This is the moment.
I think the important thing is to figure it out.
Get it.
Not how, you know, how long it takes. You know.
That's so true. But as an artist, also a musician, right? Yep. Like I think that's the same thing. And you worked with artists. Everybody who's an artist in some form ends up getting a manager or a seller or a businessman to take care of their art, and they just do their art. But when we do what we do as chefs, we have to do it all.
Yeah.
You have to be good at all of it.
Right.
You know, and when you play music.
And we're just not, you know, honestly. Who can be? I mean, other than, you know, people like, I don't know, John George or Danielle, or those guys are just brilliant at everything, right?
But they have help. Huge teams, you know, so. You still cook at home because you love it.
I do. I cook for my son 3 meals a day.
Let's talk about your son. You're a dad. I've known you for so long.
Yeah.
Honestly, dad was never on the list of things that I would ever think you would be.
Yeah, me either. Me either. Not until, I was 57 when I had him or something. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Wow. You got the energy for it, though.
Yeah, man. Yeah. There was no way I could have been a father at the normal age, whatever the normal age is, that would have been a disaster.
30.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I was a kid. I was a child. And so my immaturity really helped in that way.
It helped shepherd you to your,
Yeah. Hopefully. So now I'm sort of mature and sort of responsible. And now I can have, you know, I can have the responsibility of having, of being a parent, which is just
wild.
A motherfucker.
I love it. But I think you can be honest about that.
Man, yeah.
But when you look into Seppi's eyes and he looks back at you.
Man, it's just nothing. You know, you can't, it's just, you just can't imagine loving something, someone that much. It's just
an ocean of love.
Oh, it's bananas, man. It's bananas. I mean, I love my wife, but listen.
Take my wife, please. Yeah.
You know, but this is a whole different.
Yeah, if you had to take one person with you in the world was coming to an end and there was something you're like, really comes down to it, I know who I'm choosing. This kid's coming with me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
I'd take my puppy. I'm sorry, there's one thing, this is exciting for me. I get to spend some time and learn from you. I feel like you're the one through line for all your restaurants over all this time is you manage to get this. There's a feeling about them that's like there's a special energy in your restaurants. And I'd love to that's something that's always missing for me. And I've always had partners that bring that side of things. What do you think? Where does that come from? Is it just that you're like naturally cool? You got an accent? Or is it you're well dressed? Or is it that you prioritize it? Is it the music or the way it? Where does that energy come from?
Yeah, it's a confluence of all of that, I think, and it's the place I want to be, and it's the place I want to go to, and it's the place I want to hang out in. You know, that's you know, we find great people, we find great managers, we find with like sensibilities, we decorate the place in a certain way that feels nice. People look nice in the lighting.
You were talking about the playlist.
The playlist is super important. I curate every song. I listen to every 350 songs, and it's all of that, you know, just put together. I can't really,
So it's in, you're like, I can't really put my finger on it, but it's definitely intentional.
And the other thing is too, I listen. I like, we have partners that are smart and I listen. He wants this on the menu. And I don't fight with him about it. I said, you know, he's got.
Is that new, or were you? Did you
always.
Used to?
No, it's not always. New.
Well,
always.
Let's talk a little bit about Waverly Inn, because yep. we have to talk about vibe, yep. talk about scene, talk about one of the most
yeah.
iconic restaurant.
Right, but
moments.
I can take 10% responsibility for that. You know, we've Graydon Carter was our partner. You know, and at the time he was the editor in chief of Vanity Fair. So I mean, you know, it was a layup for that to
And happen. You just get lucky, or how did that happen?
That happened. A friend of mine lived on Bank Street, and he said, "Hey, you know, the Waverly Inn has become available."
So, I know I've heard the story. Yeah. But the relationship between you and this man, how did that come to be?
Well,
you met for the first time in that meeting.
Through the landlord, we met, and then and Sean McPherson was my boss at the Maritime Hotel, and we all met, and we decided to do this restaurant. Sean designed it and decorated it, and great.
It just sounds like such magic that just,
it really
it
does.
Was. Yeah. It was magic,
but you need to give yourself way more credit, because the food.
Yeah,
the staff.
And again, Graydon was like, "Don't give me any of that chefed up crap." You know, and so, okay, you know.
A salad from the Ivy.
Salad from the Ivy was you know, delivered FedEx.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We ate wilted greens and said, oh, this is, you know, what we need to have. And, yeah, there was a lot of input from ownership at that point. And I listened. I listened and delivered. And we ultimately, you know, got really reviewed very well in the New York Times by Frank Rich.
Frank Rich.
And is that right?
Yeah. Bruni.
Frank Bruni. Frank Bruni. And it went bananas.
Yeah. It was bananas.
Yeah.
It was actually bananas.
Bananas. It was
unbelievable.
The most fun I ever had in working.
Yeah. All day long, you just had anybody coming into that restaurant. Yeah. How did you manage to deal with, like, you know, you got these characters that obviously are demand, you know, like, you can't really say no when Sean Connery walks up and says, can you do his accent?
The junk was fabulous.
I need a table immediately. Something.
Yeah.
I mean,
so how do you say no to that guy?
I'm not sure.
No, that's my
getting
daughter.
My Liam Neeson.
My daughter was taken.
The girls.
Everybody, models, actresses, actors, musicians, everybody.
Yeah.
Who was anybody? I mean, was there, first of all, anybody who you were actually starstruck by?
It's funny. I just was talking about this the other day with someone, and there was, like you say, everybody there, but Bruce Willis, who's now, you know, very sick, unfortunately. But Bruce Willis.
A lot of people say I look just like him, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say that when I got in. the guy had such charisma.
Ooh.
Really?
And just beaming. Like he was a guy.
He's a star. He lights
up
the room.
That's so interesting that that's a standout.
Yeah, I mean, for me, he was a complete standout, as was J-Lo.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah. And she had the smile that was just, and you know, and it's funny because it was a small place, and you'd see these people up very close.
Yeah.
Like very close. You know what I mean? Cause you couldn't, you, right. we were yeah. this more than this close away from them. And Graydon was so gracious. He'd introduced me to everyone, and you know, and then De Niro gave me a big bear hug, cause he, you know, his martini was not right. And but it was fun, man. It was so much fun.
Just like, you know, late nights, and just so I can just only imagine, like, you're the young guy, you did this thing.
Yeah.
It's your first kind of like at bat, and you swing this home run, and then you're get to be part of them.
What a vibe.
And people would, you know, and the thing was, I learned a lot about wine there, because people would order, you know, these, you know, Chateau Margaux, you know, 81, and not drink it. And we would
drink
this wine after service, and it was like, wow. I was like, what is that? I never had that in my life. You know, it was, and I learned about what good wine is all about. It was really cool.
How many years was it?
Years ago.
Now, how many years were you actually doing that?
I think it was 4 years.
It was 4 years. I worked around the corner. I worked at Gusto Restaurant, which is right around the corner. So I would come by a lot. We'd have coffee, come by at late nights and have some drinks or whatever it was. And You know, it was just endless excitement.
Yeah.
Honestly.
The black cars in front. I mean, it's just, yes. And the neighbors hated us. And although our neighbors were pretty famous too.
This is before cell phones, so unfortunately there's no evidence of any of this. This is all.
We did. We had flip phones. No,
we had
flip.
Well, we didn't have cameras on our
phones.
There were
no cameras. Yeah.
Wow, that's a great time. I miss that time.
Yeah. When you could actually get away with, you know, nowadays anything you do, anything you say, it's like, you know, you're in trouble.
But I think it was bananas and cool because of that. It's probably not.
They try to do it. They're like, leave your phone out at the restaurant. You're like, all right, buddy, come on.
Yeah, that's such a good point because I remember being in there many nights and I don't remember anybody with phones like that.
No.
Wow. What a different time. Okay, so you've had a long life. You've had 9 lives. You have a long chef career. You're doing Cook Unity now, which is totally different than anything you've ever done.
Yeah.
This is packaged meals.
Yes.
And, you know, our producer, Cindy, saw your photo on the subway the other day.
Yeah.
Your photo is on the subway.
Yes.
How great is
many,
that?
Many, many, many texts.
Oh, you did? Have you ever been on the subway next to your photo and someone gives you that?
Actually, no. I was on the subway on Sunday and I saw it, yes.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. No one recognized you and kind of gave you that double take?
No, thank God.
Like, hey, it's this guy.
New Yorkers don't care.
Careless.
They don't care.
Yeah. Some guy was asleep on it.
Probably. Probably. Yeah. So Cook Unity, what probably most people don't know is you're one of the most popular chefs with one of the most popular dishes.
Yeah, we have the best-selling dish in the country.
What's your dish?
Mom's Sunday sauce.
That's genius. Incredible.
Mom's Sunday sauce.
Yeah.
Was it your mom's recipe?
It's ish.
Grandma. Yeah. There was a woman once that cooked something of that nature.
I mean, Americans love goomba culture, man.
Yeah. I mean, red sauce joints are delicious.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
They do. And that is a whole different thing. So how do you even manage it, gauge it? How do you like it?
Oh, it's amazing. It's an amazing concept. The CEO is this guy, Matteo. He's smart and funny and a great guy, young. And, you know, he's got this vision for it. I mean, it's probably going to... It's probably going to expand to Europe soon.
Wow.
I mean, I'm in 4 markets, New York, Chicago, LA, and Miami. We sell 20,000 meals a week, all told.
So even if somebody doesn't live in New York City and they live in Chicago, they can eat your food.
Yes. All across the East Coast, Midwest, and then LA, the West Coast. Yeah.
So when Dan goes home, he can order some Cook Unity.
I'm going to get some Mom's Sunday.
Cookunity.com. Absolutely.
It's Mom's Sunday.
You know, and it was really a godsend because, you know, back when we closed everything down, which is 2020, right? March, is that right?
Yes.
2020 March, it's like, what the fuck?
What do we do?
What am I going to do?
So this was a lifesaver.
Man, and then Scotty, you know, my partner in Cook Unity said, listen, I'm doing this thing with my restaurant, you should do it. I was like, what is it? He said, well, you make these meals and, you know, you put them in, they get sealed in this big fancy Italian machine, takes the CO2 out, seals the machine, and it goes and we deliver it. I was like, okay, that sounds weird.
Right.
But I get to this kitchen in Bushwick, you know, magnificent, you know, old Pfizer plant.
Oh, amazing. So you just got a heart on the whole time.
So it's like, wow, what the hell? Yeah, exactly. The little blue pills everywhere.
Pretty much. No wonder. This Mom's Sunday supper.
So, you know, it was me and Angel Vela, my chef, and we just two of us just doing 20 meals, 30 meals, and 40 meals a week, and 50 meals a week, and 150 meals a week.
Just on fire. It's one of those ones. You know you get a hit.
Just the two of us, yes. And he had another job. Another job in those days. And he would leave me. I was doing it myself.
No.
Yeah.
And so you're like masked up in the back kitchen making little do people know that actually they're getting, you know, the chef's hands.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
So I was, you know, and then we hired 2 people, 3 people, 4 people. And then just now we're doing... I think last week we sold 12,000 meals in New York.
Wow.
Congratulations.
That's amazing.
Well deserved. Yeah. So from a chef who's always done small, beautiful, boutique-y kind of restaurants, how do you scale up?
I mean, you find people that
know what the hell they're doing. Know what the hell they're doing.
Like, do you go in there with a tasting spoon every once in a while and say, okay.
Oh, yeah.
This
absolutely.
Isn't it.
Yeah.
You know? thicker, yeah, and it's, more
and,
salt. More...
And, you know, Cook Unity is essentially a tech company, right? So they've developed all this software. There's an app that we're on, and you punch in the recipe, and we need 540, you know, rigatonis, and boom, it gives you all the percentages and all the ratios. And so, you know, you can kind of, you know, okay, here's 60 pounds of pork and 40 pounds of beef, and let's go.
And it works.
And it works, yeah. It works.
So you
But it's very, very dedicated people working there. I mean, I've got a great crew, and, you know, and I'm there once a week, and we go over all the recipes and new dishes. And
amazing chefs, all their different dishes.
Yeah. I love that you're doing that. I love that you are open to doing just about anything.
Yeah.
And
there's college to pay for in a few years. Let's be real.
Now you have college. I mean, before that, like, so.
You could do what my dad did, which is like, you know, I got you till you're 18 years old. And then, you know, you're on your own merits, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want a car? Well, wait till you're 18.
His mother's going to keep him till as long as she can.
How do you stay inspired? Like, you and I will go out to dinner every once in a while. Do you still buy and look at cookbooks? Do you look at social media? Is it
a lot of social? There's a lot of great stuff. I told you yesterday. I saw this guy that I loved, Christian.
Yeah,
yeah. I find great stuff. I
Christian
find
Petroni.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to Christian Petroni.
What's the deal?
I love that guy's food, man. I mean, I
on
just,
Instagram, he makes some beautiful food videos.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I mean, stuff like that, and I just. And Missy Robbins, our friend, I mean, her food's beautiful.
Unbelievably delicious.
Yeah, I mean, she's so good. And
what's inspiring. Your favorite dish she's made?
Say again?
Have you had one dish that stands out from her?
From her?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's all just so good. Honestly, she kills it.
She made a linguine and clam sauce. I was sitting at the bar at Lily, and she brings over this linguine and clam sauce, and it made me angry. And I've been she's going to come on here.
Yeah,
and I've been so excited because I'm like, I've been making this dish at my house over and over and over again, trying to get it right, trying to make it. And it's missing something.
Yeah.
It had so much flavor. It was unbelievable.
She's great, man. Yeah. She's just great. And I mean, we're friends. I mean, no, I'm not.
Well, now that we're bringing up Missy Robbins, I definitely want to go back to the past little. Back.
Oh, she worked for you.
Yes.
Holy moly.
So,
I'm not sure who worked for who at that point, but yes. We worked in the same place.
Missy actually worked for John, but eventually she was the boss.
Wasn't she the sous chef?
Yeah. I mean, she's...
Missy Robbins was a sous chef or chef de cuisine at Soho Grand Hotel.
Yeah,
you were the executive of the Grand Hotels.
I was the executive of the Grand Hotels.
And there was a little blip on the radar when I was the chef de cuisine at the Tribeca Grand
Hotel.
For
about 10 minutes, yeah, I remember.
I hated that job so much.
And by the way, it didn't show.
No, I kept that a secret every day when I cried in the office.
Exactly.
I was there the other day and I felt like I was like 150 years old. There was a bunch of teenagers smoking cigarettes in the bathroom, and I was like, "What is going on? What happened to me?" I was like, I almost went over and gave him a lecture. I was like, "Don't you know that's
bad?" Funny, man. I mean, that was a fun job. That was
You know, I took that job because I met you. Mm-hmm. I think you came into Lavagna one night, a little restaurant.
And I ate there, and I said, that "We got to have her." Yeah, we got to have her.
Little restaurant on East 5th Street between A and B. It had its 25th anniversary the other night.
Wow. That's.
And I was a working chef at the time, and John came in, and, you know, he made me an offer. And
so you discovered and set, really?
That's how we became
friends. Well, Sal turned me on to you.
Oh, right.
Sal turned me on to you, and Sal went with Sal to eat.
Yeah.
And then I said, Sal, you got to give me your number. We got to talk to her.
Sal Rizzo, who now runs De Gustibus.
Wow. I love that guy.
We should have him
he's
on.
He's my absolute favorite.
Oh, he's the best.
He's a ball of energy.
And his husband with the
Gary Casey.
Oh, my God, that guy. Traveling. He's my that guy. Yes.
Well, actually, we will get to that. But anyway, so I met John in 2002, right? 2003? 2002 is when we met.
I don't know.
We've known each other for
October 31st. He's looking at his calendar.
Yeah. But Missy was a success at Soho Grand because it was an actual restaurant. Tribeca Grand was towers of appetizer food.
Right.
It really wasn't about the food. And I took the job to learn more about numbers and paperwork and stuff. Anyway, Sal Rizzo, who basically introduced us, used to run Cucina Italiana magazine. His partner and husband runs tours to Sicily. So, of course, John and I said, let's go to Sicily in March.
In March, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Which was the coldest, dampest yes. trip I've ever felt
and
in
the guy at the pizzeria said, what month do you go to Sicily? Nobody goes in March. What, are you crazy?
We were sleeping fully dressed with space heaters and yes. blankets and everything.
And the sheets were damp.
Wet. Oh, but we stayed with Gary's aunt and uncle.
Oh, wow.
We stayed in their house.
Wait, that was their house?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
That was their house.
Oh, that's why they were very upset.
In the Castelmare di Golfo.
Right, right, right.
And we checked ourselves in Palermo to a warm hotel, and yes. we didn't show up.
Yes.
And they thought,
well, do you have heat?
Aren't you sleeping
heat
here?
Heat was the only criteria. Do you have heat? Okay, we're in.
Oh, my goodness. But, you know, honestly, travel is yeah. huge for us.
Yeah.
We went to Trieste, we went to Sicily, we went to north and way south. But you recently were in Spain.
I was in Spain, and I was recently in Puglia.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
The boot? Is that the heel of the boot?
That's the heel of the boot.
Is that the sauce?
That's where my peeps are from.
That's where your family's from.
Yeah.
They say they oversauced their pastas there. Is that true?
Everything was fantastic.
It was.
Yeah.
Huh? I remember as a young chef, you go into a restaurant, you get a saucy pasta, it's delicious, you love the sauce, you sop it up with the bread. And then at some point, someone was like, there shouldn't be any sauce left over in the bowl. And I'm like, well, I don't, what, why should that be? What do you sop up with the bread? But I thought it was,
shoulds are like out the window.
What a shoulda, coulda, go after yourself.
This should be that, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's like cheese and Parmesan, Parmesan and fish, right? Yeah. I had Parmesan and fish all over Puglia. And so for all these years, I think, oh, Parmesan and fish, I don't know. It just really doesn't, you don't do that. And then even our one of our partners at Ambra, he's from Castellammare di Golfo. And he's like, yeah, we put a little bit.
A little cheese, a little Parmesan.
Parmigiano.
It's salt.
It's like it's.
It's
umami.
Gives you a
it's still it's like
and a sweetness.
So
and a creaminess.
Is that the evolution of like? Is that an is that a new thing?
I think it's new. I think it's newish.
Everybody realized
it's new to us, maybe, but in Italy, that's kind of not that.
But also in like the last 50 years ago, where they bring in wheels of like, you know, Puglia wasn't a terribly rich place, and so I don't know if they're really affording to bring down wheels of Parmesan cheese down there. They probably didn't have a ton of it, right?
Right.
So now all of a sudden it's available, and so the cuisine evolves. I don't really know.
I don't know history.
We need a food historian here.
We're
going to
have a lot of guys on in the next few weeks and a lot of people on the next.
Yeah. Well, that's Missy.
Ladies, maybe you can ask them.
Maybe we should ask them.
They'll know more than me, believe me. That I can guarantee.
That's not true, John. Yeah. You know a lot.
I do have one question. You know, you walk into this restaurant, you recognize that, you know, someone said, hey, Amanda's the chef you should check out. You recognize and you hire. I've never, ever successfully been able to recognize somebody's skill from meeting them offhand. It's always been luck for me. Like, you know, they worked out or they didn't. I'm like, how do you hire for a restaurant? You hire everybody and you fire the ones that don't work out or they quit on their own. Like, is there some quality that you're looking for or something you recognize?
Again, you know, it's funny. The insurance, I interviewed hundreds of people. And I really got a sense for if people were full of shit or not.
Really?
And
how am I full of shit? I'm like, Jesus, you're looking right through me.
And now when I interview people, and it's funny, you talk to them about you know, I ask them, where are you from? What do you do? Where'd you grow up? And from that, you get a lot of information even the food and that, you know, if they've got a resume that's honest and decent, that's the least of it.
So you start at the beginning of their life. You ask them,
yeah,
what's your relationship with your parents like? Are they still around? And
what'd your dad do? What'd your mom do? Really? And where'd you go to school?
Yeah.
Why? Why'd you go to school there? Did you go to college? I mean, I just have a conversation.
Interesting.
Have a couple of espressos and have a conversation. I think that's the best way to, and listen, that's that doesn't always work either.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, that's the hardest thing right now. Finding. Yeah. Finding people to work for
you. I hire chefs all over the country now. I mean, yeah, Chicago, LA, Miami.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I have a chef.
And so are you sitting down, with them or you're doing a Zoom interview?
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah. It's It's the hard part of this because people are everything. The people, you got great people, man. You got everything. It's with great people you can achieve so much. You know, right now I have a great chef de cuisine at Ambra. I mean, this guy is just serious business. And fair and nice and you know, and organized. And,
so man. Is it your restaurant? Like, I know it's your restaurant. I get it. But like, is it your restaurant or do you have to give it away to the person that is doing it every day so that they can own it and feel like they want to do it? And then how do you draw the line of when you feel confident to give it to them? And I don't know. I always run into that as well. Like,
I mean, for me, I've been doing this so long now. It's like, if you want to do, you know, we're doing a new dish and what do you think? What do you want to do? I'll say to him and he'll say, oh, how about this or that? And I was like, yeah, it looks good to me. I mean, if it looks good to me and it tastes good, what do I care?
Yeah.
I mean, well, because you've taken your ego out of it.
The ego, first of all, that's given. You have to do that if you want to.
You want an ego or a paycheck? Which but, one?
I mean, you're talking about chefs who are known for egos, right? Yeah. Everybody who is absolutely household names are because they have this massive ego. For some reason, that's an attraction to the.
Right, but I think probably the best people don't have. I mean, you think?
No, I agree.
Eric Repair has an ego. I don't.
Yeah, I don't. Think he does. I know he does. I know he does. he fired my ass.
it's interesting that you brought that up. Because
oh, really?
No. I was not fired by him. He's an extraordinary, magnanimous, and kind-hearted, wonderful chef.
Well, he seems like he's also there's not spiritual.
I remember the day that he walked into the kitchen and he goes. Chris, who was the chef de cuisine at the time, he goes, you will no longer call Daniel Jack Job because I've taken on religion and, you know, and we're not going to have a violent kitchen anymore. Like one day he literally walked in and was like, I am now Buddhist and no more screaming at Daniel. And wow. I was like, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. You know, finding God really saved my hide.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, real thing.
I mean, and how many years ago was that?
I don't know, like 150,000 years ago. I was 15 years old.
That was one of the things.
Buddha himself.
Yeah, the big ears. He was listening.
That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about because I've known you for so long and you have managed to preserve yourself so well. You're fit, you're handsome, you're ageless.
Where are we here? What is this?
What is your self-care? What do you do? How do you do it?
Well, I go to the gym. I meditate every day.
You meditate?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
In the morning?
I learned TM. It's funny because like a lot of my heroes, quote-unquote heroes, like people that I admire, Jerry Seinfeld and Howard Stern these film directors, and they all do TM.
Yeah.
Right? They all do TM.
We're going to have to talk offline. This is
transcendental meditation.
I couldn't stick with it. Yeah. I did the course. I couldn't stick with it.
Oh, no. So you just got to do it. So I did it. I mean, I did it like for 3 years without missing a day.
20 minutes twice a day.
20 minutes. I did at least once. Twice a day was very difficult. But I did twice a day for a long time. And now I do once a day. And I tried the second time, but it's really, really hard. One of my goals is to try to get back to that second, second one, right?
I just heard Seinfeld talk about that. So
I learned it, and I just became, I don't know, more in control, more. It's hard to describe, but definitely like, you know, more disciplined, more disciplined, because that's what I wasn't for a long time, you know, is discipline. I'm at the gym 3-4 days a week, and I meditate every morning, and I'm up every day with the kid. And
what do you do? Lock yourself in the bathroom? Like, where do you get those 20 minutes?
Before everyone gets up in the morning. I get up at 6:30, and everyone in the house is up at 7, so I do it from 6:30 to 6 to 6 to 30, 40, 50.
50.
6:50, 20 minutes later. Hello.
Two, three. No bookkeeping.
Anyway, the bookkeeping's out for me. and so I do it for 20 minutes and then everyone is up and we roll, you know? Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
So I'm so sorry. My mother meditates. I have a weird relationship because she meditated so much in my life that I always kind of was scared of it because it was like, you know, I didn't get her attention because she was spending the time meditating. What does it do for you? Is it centering you?
It allows you to sort of make good decisions. You know what I mean? It allows you to make, like, for me, it's like, again, Do I want to go to the gym three days a week? No, but I do it. I do it because it's what I need to do, right? My kid's five. I want to see him go to college. I want to live a long time.
Play ball with the kid.
Yeah, I want to be, you know what I mean? So there are things I need to do in order to make that happen. So that's what it helps me to do. I've got Cognity, I've got Ombra, you know what I mean? I've got all these people to hire, all these resumes to look at, all these interviews to do on Zoom. I mean, I got to be.
If you were like super rich, would you keep going?
I mean, probably. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's not about the money. I wish it was.
I'm asking this question specifically because I'm hoping that people will give me their extra if they're going to keep working because I'm done. You'll find me in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't even, I mean.
Well, I think meditation's a lot about being present, right? And I think if the more you're present in that moment, you're enjoying it more. I feel like you're enjoying everything you do much more than you used to.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's knowing true. You.
Yeah.
And
that bear hug from Robert De Niro sounded like it was really enjoyable.
That was great. Really
awesome. It sounded really great to me.
And it's funny because Graydon was like, you know Bob, right?
You know Bobby. You know
Bob.
No, I don't know.
Of course I know him. I think he drove my taxi. I was, what are you talking about? Oh, this guy.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
No, I find that to be incredibly hard to instill that daily discipline.
It's the hardest thing. Oh, it's the hardest thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And for somebody who does it, I'm always impressed and inspired by that. That you, out of everything you do, can take that 20 minutes for you.
I have a lot of motivation. You know what I mean? With a child, a 5-year-old child, it's you know, I really.
Were you? Was this purposeful? You having this kid, or was it? It was.
Oh,
you wanted to have a kid.
Yeah,
you're like, I'm all in.
I met the right women, and yes, it was cool.
Julia, it's Julia's birthday today.
It's her birthday.
Oh my God!
Today.
Happy birthday! We got to get you out of here. Yeah. You're gonna get in.
She's 24, I think.
Yes.
I do have to ask you a favor. I want to give the people that are listening to this and really selfishly a gift that you can offer from all of your experience or success or for whatever.
Dinner for four.
Something that you do for yourself other than meditation, a book that you would suggest for us to read, you know, something that you think you could share. Maybe it's like something that you've discovered in the kitchen. Just something that you can share with people that will give a little bit of the joy to them that you've received from it.
John's book.
Well, your book, by the way, your book was extraordinarily well written.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, what a writer.
Yeah.
I know you had help, but it was really, really well written.
Editing. Yeah.
That was a real page turner. Annoyingly good writer.
Yeah.
Ken,
thank you.
Right?
Ken, well, you know, Ken did a lot of the editing for me and a lot of the.
The storytelling is you. Obviously.
The storytelling is just, you know,
was just your life, which is just like
it was a cool.
Luck-ish.
I mean, I'm trying to do another one, but I just can't get to see. That's the thing. I just can't get going. I don't know. I think that what can I say? There's been so many good books that I've read.
If you were to write another one, what would it be about?
You know, I had a very tumultuous relationship with partners at the Lion, and that was really shitty, really really shitty. I was miserable for a long time after that.
I remember.
And I can sort of just not even think about it anymore, which I can't even fathom. But so I think I would write about that.
I honestly think that you should, because I think a lot of people in our industry could relate to that.
Yeah.
And how to get through it, past it emotionally, financially.
Yeah. It was a breaker. I mean, it cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars personally. And you know, everything that I made, I had to give back. And you know, start from zero again. So that's tough. This is what I'm talking about.
You're so resilient.
Yeah. I mean,
you're humbly resilient, though.
But my wife, Julia, was really helpful. And man, she was there in the worst time, you know, the worst time personally. And so that without her, I wouldn't have been able to do it. It would have been a tragic situation. It sucked hard. Yeah.
Well, you made it through, and you're coming out on top.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, like you always do.
Keep like, going, man. You keep going. That's what I'll share with people.
There it is.
Keep going.
Just keep going. And honestly,
I saw something. If you're in hell, paraphrasing now. If you're in hell, keep going.
Yeah. Keep going. Really. Keep going.
So the difference between the winners and the losers is perseverance and luck and hard work.
Make your luck, yeah. Make your luck, right? You make your luck. You just keep going and keep going and you do it. You keep. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Stop. I mean, you can't stop.
That's what I would say. That's always my John takeaway. That's always the thing that you've inspired me to do is just keep going. Don't worry about it.
Mm.
A million times I've called John for advice. This guy said this and this guy said that. Don't worry about what they said. Just do your thing. Just do it. Just do what they want. Do your thing.
Yeah, they're going to say shit all the time.
And yeah.
Oh my God. People have said such shit about me over the years.
Is that true? Oh, I've only heard good things about you.
Well, that's nice. But you have a great reputation. read the New York Post. Oh my God!
By the way, in New York City, there are two types of people. It's like the people that take cruises and read the New York Post, and then there's the rest of us. So right. God bless you, but we don't read the New York Post.
Oh my God! Yeah, some terrible things, terrible things. And it's like,
Well, we only feel good things about you. Thank you for coming on.
Of course.
A little inside information: you are the writer of our intro music. For On the Line, because you're an amazing musician.
Oh, that's nice. I'll have something for you guys.
Thank you for that.
By the way, he hadn't agreed to that before. Just now. So we just sprung that on him. So thank you for that. And I didn't know that either. And you're going to play that on your band. What do you play?
Your guitar.
Guitar.
Well, I have a whole production studio in my house.
That's so great.
So I asked if there was logic here. There's not.
But do you play music in your restaurants yourself? No, you don't ever play your own. Is it a hobby? Can people listen to it anywhere?
No.
Is it on spot? No. It's just for you.
Just for me.
Do you make the music? You record it and you
record it and.
And you only share it.
And
really?
Put it in a box. Yeah. Mm. But I've always thought about sharing it. I mean, I played music. I played out for a while.
Your dad still plays.
My dad's an amazing musician. Yeah, but I mean, I take the guitar and I do workshops and stuff like that.
I'm always shocked with people that my mom's a painter, and she won't sell her art. She won't ever do it. I mean, she's prolific. She's so much, and she's just like
it's not fun for
me. As soon as I start, she tried as a kid. She was like, it took all the fun away.
Ah.
As soon as it's for somebody
else. Get this
out of here. Ma, you gotta get the paintings out of the garage. Thank you so much for being on.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for being here. I love you so much.
That way, I love
you. Thank you.
I'm very, very grateful for getting to meet you, bud.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
On the Line was recorded in New York City at Dubway Studios. Thanks, Al. Our studio engineer and editor is Mark Frangelo.
Our theme song is an original composition generously donated and played by Chef John DeLucci.
Our producer is Cindy Augustine, and our co-producer and publicist is Jesse Gerstein.
That's all, folks. Thanks for listening.